Lone Pine, California, December 5th, 1981. The thought came to me this morning that it might be well for me to make an abstract of my philosophic position in a series of points without developing argument in support, inasmuch as that work has been done already, but rather a presentation of the points that characterize this philosophy. And so I am attempting to do that at this time. The first point as to how it arose. I had started on a search for that which has been known in Eastern religious literature as either enlightenment or fundamental realization. I had become convinced that there almost certainly was such an appearance as the literature indicated. I knew that Buddha had started on such a search as the Prince Gautama. And after an experiment lasting 6 years, involving extreme austerity, he abandoned that experiment and went under a Bodhi tree, stating he would not leave that place until he had attained the answer to the question of human suffering. Under that tree, he had the appearance which has generally been known as enlightenment. Sri Aurobindo has referred to appearances of this sort and has added another term for its designation, namely that of fundamental realization. But the point is made emphatically by Sri Aurobindo that this is the foundation, base, for a spiritual philosophy or religious development. And the same thing is to be found in the biography of Sri Shankara Acharya. When this event happens to an individual, it appears that they become the beginning point, or very frequently become the beginning point of a development, which may be either in philosophic form, as in the case of Shankara, or in the form of religio-ethical developments, as in the case of the Buddha. While a similar statement with respect to the one known to us as Jesus, who became later the Christ, the record of such an event in his life is not to be found in the New Testament, nonetheless, there is a record written by a Russian, Notovich, which is based upon a manuscript record in a Tibetan monastery, which purports to give the events in the life of the entity who is known to us as Jesus and as Christ, under the name of Saint Isa. And it is there stated that he had such an experience, as I remember, in Kashmir, and had started a work involving certain peoples other than the Israelites for a period of time until he felt the impulse to return to the land of his birth. If one searches the records, we find that there are various references to such radical experiences, or rather, experiences, especially in the book of Maurice Buck called Cosmic Consciousness, where he made a search for individuals who might have had such experiences either in major form or in the form of minor developments, and left us a very interesting record of such peoples. In my case, I had become convinced while still in the academy that there was a high probability that such appearances existed, and I decided to make a search for such, a decision that it resulted in my abandoning an academic career which was at that time opening to me, either in the field of philosophy or pure mathematics. After a search of 22 years, in which most of the time I was stumbling and moving blindly, ultimately I found a representation of the philosophy of Shankara, and through perusal of that, there was initiated in my own case an experience of monumental importance in my own life. It certainly had the value of enlightenment, not necessarily in the sense of a sensible light. As a matter of fact, it was not sensible at all, but it had a strong sense of a luminous consciousness combined with a very strong ananda, or state of bliss. This event took place in the middle of the afternoon as I was sitting in a porch swing after having read the portion of Shankara's thought in the System of the Vedanta by Paul Deussen that dealt with the subject of liberation. I have described what happened before, and I'll repeat it again. I had this sense that I'm already that which I seek. Therefore, nothing is to be attained. and I thought that would be the end of the matter. But at that moment, it was as though the heavens opened and a treasure of consciousness fell at my feet, far beyond anything I had ever expected. And it was out of that event that the philosophy of consciousness without an object was ultimately born. Now, a word about the consciousness. I have studied it very thoroughly. It was not a conceptual, intellectual state of consciousness. It did not deal with concepts at all. And on the other hand, it was not a sensible state of consciousness, as of something seen, heard, smelled, tasted, or otherwise sensed. Not at all like any of these. But at the same time, it had the effect of giving me the assurance that all the ultimate questions that had disturbed me throughout my life, and the questions that had disturbed other human beings, were here answered. Not as a conceptual answer, but as a sense of inner assurance that carried the force of the conviction that is all is well within. All is as it should be. In other words, the wrongness in the world is only a surface manifestation, not something fundamental. That is the assurance given by this imperience. But as this imperience seemed to have no relation to our concepts or our percepts, it did not seem to fit. It seemed rather to be a kind of consciousness in which there was a fusion of the knower and the known. There was then a question as to whether anything could be said. Nonetheless, I did not give up on the problem of interpretation. I know that Buddha said nothing could be said. But we have developed instruments of communication since the time of Buddha that give us certain advantages. This is especially to be found, as I determined, in the study of pure mathematics, which is a contribution from the West. I have attempted the resolution of the problem of communicating something of the value attained in this way. And that is how I have been able to put forth three books Pathways through to space, the philosophy of consciousness without an object, and introceptualism. What I've been able to communicate is only a tiny part of the total meaning, the total value. But it is something more than nothing at all. Point number two. The most fundamental determination which came forth from the appearance or experience of August 7th, 1936 is this fact that the all in all of which the universe and everything and every entity within the universe is composed is consciousness itself. Consciousness thus is not the result of the action of a non-conscious cause. Consciousness is the root, not the flower or effect. Consciousness is the all in all. There is no such thing as a non-conscious universe. The notion of a non-conscious universe is a human imaginary construct. Nobody whatsoever has experienced such a thing as non-consciousness or unconsciousness. The whole notion is a speculative construct. There are differences in kinds of consciousness, and it is unquestionably true that from the perspective of one kind of consciousness, the content which is available from another kind of consciousness may not be available to the first kind of consciousness. That is possible. But no one ever experienced unconsciousness. The very notion itself is a contradiction in terms, and the use of the notion is a major logical failure. But when I had the appearance of consciousness in 1936, my consciousness was split into two parts. I was experiencing or experiencing two kinds of consciousness at the same time. One was the consciousness that constituted the fundamental realization. And then at the same time, I was conscious in the ordinary sense, in the sense of our ordinary relative or subject-object consciousness, by which we apprehend the world about. At the same time, I knew the environment of that time, where I was, the geographic location, and yet was passing through this enlightening form of consciousness. And by reason of that fact, I have been able to record a great deal, but not everything. This is a very important point, and I therefore dwell on it to some extent. There is a tendency among many thinkers to imagine that the universe to begin with is a non-conscious somewhat, out of which consciousness was evolved. But that, as some have claimed, that consciousness need never have been. But this is sheer artificial speculation. For no entity whatever has experienced non-consciousness. For to experience is to be conscious. It's as simple as that. Therefore, the notion of a non-conscious existence is only a speculative construct. And then to take a speculative construct like this and try to explain the immediate fact of consciousness, which we all know immediately, I think is about the most ridiculous and absurd exercise in which human beings have engaged. They imagine that they are rigorous thinkers. They're nothing of the sort. They are simply like little children who are playing make-believe. We can predicate nothing at all of that, of the supposed non-consciousness. Point number three may be stated this way. Before any existence became, consciousness is. From consciousness without an object, an object is projected, and so is also the subject to consciousness. These are both derivative, not original. Consciousness is the original existence or substance, or that from whence all else is derived. Both the knower and the known are derivative. Point number four. This philosophy is manifestly not materialism, not realism, either in a gross or a subtle sense, as that term is employed in designating schools of philosophy. Nor is it idealism, for idealism is not an orientation to consciousness per se, but is an orientation to that which is conscious. This philosophy is an orientation to consciousness itself, and views everything else as derivative. Therefore, I had a problem in finding a designating term for it was not like any of the known systems of philosophy. I called it introceptualism, which is a correctly formed word. I've used that term already, and I doubt it can be found today in any dictionary. There's another word that has been employed, and that is is imperience, a word similar to experience. I employ this new term, which is the contribution of another person, to represent forms of immediacy other than the apprehension of sensuous information. I restrict the term experience, for a sensational datum, and use the term imperience for other forms of immediacy.